I was just thinking about merging it into that 80 awesome list that I added there. So,
ooh,
but that's not a day problem.
That. Hi guys.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We're not quite comfortable with that.
Hi.
Oh, all right.
We're live.
Hi.
I'm eating the rest of my candy.
Yeah, I just kind of dropped that on us. Sorry. Hey, welcome everybody. Welcome to the Trimark Twitch Happy Hour. I am your host for the day, Horse in the Corner, aka Jake. Today we have we'll give you a second. We've got
No, continue. I'll go eventually.
Sorry, Danny.
All right, I'm better now.
I thought I heard one of you say all right, cut to the intro. And yeah. Who is that guy up there? Jeff, who are you?
Hi, everyone.
How dare you?
Jeff McChuckin here.
No. You need no introduction for yourself, sir. How dare you? Jake, as Jeff M.F. and McJunkin.
You're allowed to swear on here.
Oh, okay.
Oh, are you really? don't make him introductory. You know, actually, make him introduce himself. Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to the party. I'm not the one running it this week.
Yeah, for
that's okay. It'll probably be a more organized party anyway.
Slightly more organized.
I don't know what to do with my hands right now because I don't have to like make it any
monitor all the things everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
All right. So we know who Jeff is now. Mike, who are you? It's your first time on the show, so you have to give us an introduction at this point.
Sure. So Mike Sewell, I work in consulting. I cover a lot of areas, but have had backgrounds in on-prem data centers, cloud, security, enterprise networking, worked in a few industries like healthcare and education. And yeah, today I lead identity practices and cloud practices for my consulting, our large consulting firm.
Healthcare and education, it looks like you went the easy route in your consulting group.
It was boring, so I decided to switch paths.
Try some hard for once. God.
Yeah, jeez.
Am I still getting political spam calls?
How? Yeah, how? You know what? I got some on Wednesday, too, and I was like, what? You guys are spending money for no reason right now.
Yeah.
What's going on, guys?
Jerks.
Yeah, a bunch of jerks. And not James down at the bottom. So anybody that's here expecting James Spencer from Monash University, unfortunately, Australia's time is much different from U.S. time.
Today we learned as ignorant Americans.
I think there might have been either a miscommunication or an oversleeping. So we are just going to push ahead with something that Danny recommended that I've already forgotten because I was so focused on looking around for James. What did you recommend, Danny?
It's 6 a.m. in Sydney. I don't know why you agree with that. And by the time it was 2 p.m. his time, it would be...
Yeah.
That's math.
It's math.
Anyway, that would be a time we're not going to do this.
7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. Yeah.
Well, ain't happening. I enjoy calling audibles as much as the next bloke does. And since we have two very educated and two very involved people on, I started talking. I went to Jeff. Mike and I have just met, so I can't intrude on his personal life that much yet, but give me an hour and I'll know everything. But I said, Jeff, what are you working on? And of course he rattles off his usual list of things that he's doing that his brain makes him do. Cause he's very, go all the time, as far as I know. And I was like, well, let's make this about education. Cause education is one of the silver bullets. I don't care what industry that you're in. So, and then Jeff rattled off some more stuff, which I also now forget. But we're going to be talking about that stuff. We're going to be talking about upping your game and educating yourself and projects that people work on and what's currently keeping their minds occupied. Jeff mentioned something you can easily rattle off for about an hour. I forget, Jeff, what were we talking about before we got in here?
Yeah, I figured between Mike's background and my own, for those less familiar with Mike, he gave some of his background there, but he fulfills what I would say is the Trimark stereotype, of came from the admin world and got more into the consulting side of things. But he spent his time at the grindstone of on-prem of cloudy things, then getting more specialized, getting more on the consulting side, which fits like the Jims and the Jakes of the world as well. So I figured between my background and Mike's, something we can always talk about are some of the quick wins to get you closer and closer to things like the tiered administration model, or I hear there's some other phrase for tiered administration model nowadays, as well as just helping you learn, because helping you build out like lab environments, helping you build out a method of testing, a method of affecting change within your environment. Because as I will always rant about, always, you can't improve if you can't change. So having a process to affect change within your organization is a prereq for security. So I figured between that and a few specifics that Mike and I could speak to, that could be a fun topic for the day.
Yeah, here's actually, I have one to start off right away. Because while I do most of the our marketing and this is why I'm usually the host. While I am primarily the marketing and operations and customer success and all of the other crap, that I'm not technical, I'm not hands on keyboard, but I have to be kept up, and I am kept up because I work with people like Jake, that I can't help but be kept up on the technical aspect of Active Directory and Entra and all of these things. One of the questions that I've had come up a lot when I am scoping or talking to potential customers or shaking my coffee mug on the corner for change for people to buy assessments from us I haven't seen, and maybe Jake as one of our service leads will dispute this, but I've seen more hybrid than I have anything else, right? It's very rarely that I've seen something that we're just assessing an on-prem or we're just assessing a cloud environment. So from that perspective, unless that premise is flawed, if somebody wanted to create a lab for themselves, whether that's just private, you know, fun time, or it's something that that a company or a team is using, can you talk about what kind of lab would really reflect a good hybrid environment and maybe some gotchas of that, where people could be better prepared do you ever see this is a second part of the question, building a hybrid lab, right? And do you ever see it going to somebody purely being in Microsoft Cloud or staying purely on prem? Do you think hybrid is here to stay? And will that always be the case? So yes, ideal lab environment. And will that always be the case? Go.
So hybrid lab is getting harder and harder in my perspective, just because everything's a subscription, meaning everything has a dollar associated with it. So that's always a challenge. It's yeah. Highly recommended, though. I don't know, Jeff or
yeah, Jake, I am incredibly biased towards labs that the parts that you can maintain on-prem on your own machine, you should. Partially for the cost, but also for the easy availability. Like the fact that you can resume a VM that you have locally means that you're more likely to try something off the cuff, as opposed to, oh, let me spin up another lab environment and wait 45 minutes for it to be finished deploying, et cetera. So that said, for the cloudy things, you're not going to replace Entra ID APIs yourself. It's just not going to happen. You have to use it. So at that point, one of my favorite resources is Purple Cloud. I'll share that link inside of Twitch as well. I think I can share links there. Yeah. Purplecloud.network is the main site for that one. What's that?
We gave you link sharing rights like the first time you showed up. Don't worry.
Oh, that's right. I have the powers now. Purple Cloud helps you set up not only on-prem, but also synchronization to Entra ID. It's meant for somewhat the offensive operations, but if you have an on-prem syncs to an Entra ID equivalent, you have the building blocks you need for a lot of interesting tests from then on. So I will say, if you have any way whatsoever of getting a Visual Studio subscription, those do come with Azure credits each month. And if you're spinning up real VMs in the cloud. That costs you a lot per VM per month, but spinning up an identity, a tenant in Entra ID terminology is not that expensive. But I'd still prefer you to use credits as opposed to your own dollars, because for most organizations, you're probably not going to have, here's your training budget, and separately, here's your lab budget. Feel free to use a couple hundred bucks a month, and we'll just pay you back. Probably not going to happen. So I'm very sensitive to the ongoing cost aspects of that. So Purple Cloud for the actual like Terraform to help you build it out. But yeah, it's going to have some expense to it. And to another point that Danny had brought up, are we going to make it to only in cloud? Or are we going back to on-prem only? Hot take. On-prem is going away in the exact same sense that IPv4 is going away. Because IPv6 adoption has been going up over time, right? So surely we'll get rid of IPv4 once we've finished migrating, right? No, we will have both forever. For the large organizations, it's not going to happen. Out of the Fortune 500, 500 companies use on-prem Active Directory domain services. I have one lead of it might be $4.99 in the next 2 years, but that's not really moving the needle.
I remember this was 14 years ago when I wasn't even in security yet. I was a network admin at a bank studying for my CCNA or CCNA, whatever the hell it was. And the book saying like how quickly IPv4 would be good. IPv6 is now, and they're shocked they're even still writing about it. And this, and I remember the first time I learned, I remember the exact room I was in this basement in this bank that I worked at, learning about IPv6 addresses and the hurrah over it. That was 2010. So just to shape out the comment Jeff just made of it going away at the same speed IPv4 is. I have since had a child. I've moved 12 times in that interim. It's disgusting.
Yeah, I think on the cloud only front, Microsoft's made tremendous strides in the endpoint realm, but the infrastructure realm, there's still a lot of unknown and a lot of complexity there. And adding to the hybrid lab, the one note I'll call out is you can go sign up for a free tenant, like Jeff was mentioning, mm-hmm. and at least do security defaults, at least start playing with the graph APIs. So you can get started for low cost. But yeah, cloud is inevitable, but I'm pretty sure out of those 500, Fortune 500s, most of them still have an AS400 if you dig in enough closets.
It was, I think, 3 weeks ago I had lunch with a former CISO of a local regional bank that was complaining about their AS400 and Descript, where only the first eight characters of your password actually matter for the hash in the year 2024. I'm like, legacy ain't going away. And on-prem isn't really legacy. As much as I like to malign Microsoft for a lot of things, like MSRC is an alias to hold on to your complaint for 3 weeks and then say it was by design nowadays. Finally, at least 2025 has new forest functional level, domain functional level. They're caring about on-prem. You can see plenty of articles about organizations moving more of their compute tasks on-prem, because it turns out if you have predictable costs and you already have a data center, it's much cheaper to run it there than renting CPU cycles in the cloud. If the cloud is just somebody else's computer, if that's what you're using it for, then on-prem is a hell of a lot cheaper than cloud compute. It's when you talk about all of the other things, like Amazon Web Services is more than EC2 and S3. There's like 60-some services now, 70-some, right?
Yeah.
And that's when you start talking about an ecosystem involved.
Rotten hell, Lambda.
Yeah, I always like to use Exchange Online as like the go-to example of like Microsoft's created this environment where they can spin up a forest, they can spin up Exchange infrastructure and have it up and running in minutes. So like, yes, that's really hard for you to do, but you can do that on-prem. It's just, it's probably not worth it in your environment.
Yeah. I mean, Exchange is one example that I recovering Exchange admin here and sysadmin overall, and I can't justify the attack surface of having your own Exchange server on the public internet anymore. The writing's been clear on the wall for many years now that Microsoft doesn't want you to run Exchange anymore. They're running out the clock of what they're contractually obligated to support by patching just the latest 0 days. But yeah, Exchange Online or Google or whatever, but don't host your own email. Your TCP port 25 and 443 should not be exposed to the internet for email, full stop at this point.
So the ebook that I just bought called Hosting Your Own Mail Server, I should just return or...
well, maybe set it on fire?
I think building on that question too of like cloud only, is it possible? I think eventually maybe in certain specific segments, right? We've seen Exchange as an example where cloud only is pretty much the way now. Other if you're exposing it to the internet, at least.
What do you say? One of the other things that I still run into as well is when you have conversations with some of these people that have buying power, that do you still see this as well, of people still fighting anything? Is it possible? And this make a note that this comes from somebody who does not have the expertise here. It's what I rely on people like Jake for. And emotional support. He's my emotional support admin. Is it possible to stay out of Entra ID completely and like never use it and just be strictly on-prem and also wave that flag to keep fighting that of like, we will never do this?
We've seen
I'm sure Mike has the same answer, but like fundamentally, probably not for most organizations. You're going to be hybrid. You're going to be both. Bring it to courseware, sorry. There's a particular slide I'm thinking of in some courseware I often teach for SANS, like trying to distinguish, what do you mean by hybrid? Do you mean you have on-prem AD synchronized? If so, how so? And some people just have friggin' Active Directory domain services running on a Windows server that happens to be cloud hosted and have site-to-site VPN from the on-prem to what was he saying? Cloudy things? thanks, Jen. Like hosted in the cloud, and like so sure, you have Active Directory in the cloud, but you don't have Entra ID. But if you have any Azure enterprise service, you also have Entra ID. The only way to set up security permissions for any Azure service is Entra ID. Therefore, if you want anything from the Azure catalog, you will have Entra ID, Azure AD. You will be hybrid to some extent.
I think it's becoming a part of hygiene as well, of it's inevitable that something's going to come up eventually that you'll probably want that in your organization. So go get a tenant and park it, just like you would park email domains that you aren't using anymore after an acquisition or things of that nature. So like there's a considerable hygiene aspect of just, we should have this so no one else can parade as us.
Right, that makes sense. Hold on, my kid's school is calling. I will be right back.
How dare you be a parent?
Jake, take it away.
I wanted
education to, coming you.
Yeah, I was going to drop back to education. So we've talked about a cloud lab. What? And you wanted to talk about quick wins, I remember hearing you say multiple times. Mm-hmm. We all love the quick win, right? We all want to have the check the one box and suddenly you're secure thing. We've been going through, we're working on a internal document right now where I'm actually communicating with all of our assessors about what their quick wins are. And some of them are simple things like, you know, get rid of NTLM. Notice, simple, quote unquote, right? Not going to be simple. But some of them are like, improve your OU structure, like how much you could really just kind of, I know it's not a quick win, right? It's going to take time. It's going to take planning, but it's also not the same.
Yeah, it's less about the quick win, the turn on the security button. It's more about We all have limited time, limited resources. What is the most bang for your buck for the next step? And which next step best sets you up for further best steps? Right. Shameless plug for another company's products out there. Like I hear there's a thing called Locksmith that can help you out here. I hear that there's, oh gosh, what's the, not ADCS, but that we were just talking about dangling SPNs, Jake.
Oh, DNS. Yeah, just Active Directory Integrated DNS.
Yeah, but the tool you have, there's a thing for this.
Blue Tuxedo. Yeah.
Blue Tuxedo. So Blue Tuxedo, like how many of your group policies, like how many people at your organization understand your group policy? And right. All of the hands went down, right? How many of your group policies right now are unlinked and therefore could be removed or moved to like an expired or have a common prefix or could be saved and then deleted, because right now nobody understands your group policy, and that is a prerequisite to change. Right now, like most organizations have AD that they don't understand, and therefore they're effectively unwilling to make changes to it because they don't understand what they currently have. What is the next step you can take to make it a more manageable problem so you can wrap your head around it?
That was the one actually in the interview that we had with the assessors today, was that was his thing. It's like basically clean your room, right? You keep your room clean and it's easier to see the things that are out of place, that are dirty, that need a little more attention, that actually need that touching. So, yeah.
I mean, statistically, there's a hell of a lot of ADHD folk at InfoSec. How many folk, if you're in a physically dirty or messy environment, you can't focus because there's just too much mental overhead to what's going on as of that instant. Yeah. So could we get rid of some of this stuff? Like, sure, save it, back it up. I get it. If you ever need it again, but can we find the things that currently aren't making any difference in the world on our group policy, for example, and save those group policy objects and remove them. And hey, we got rid of a third.
That's huge, right? Like, especially when I'm seeing customers with hundreds, thousands of GPOs in some instances.
Oh, yeah. You're like, hundreds is like the lower bound in some organizations. A couple clients ago, I had one that they didn't understand that you could do item level targeting for printers. So they had one group policy for every printer in their company.
Yes. I love it.
Yeah. I hate to harp on printers, but like the less you can, the more you can solve printers and make it less complicated, the more you can focus on other stuff that's actually worthy of your attention. I hate printers too. Let's make it a solved problem so you can focus on other stuff instead.
For sure. Mike, what's your thing that you see that people just need to clean up a little better?
A common thread is always just inventory. Do you know what assets you're even trying to protect?
Right.
And you can get started on that for free. Yeah. I always joke too, like it may not be you buying it, but somebody bought it. So if you work with your purchasing department, they're going to be able to tell you everything that somebody bought. And if you see a vendor or a manufacturer that you want to try and manage, or is in scope of your role to manage, they're probably going to give you the initial warning sign that somebody's buying that thing.
Even if for a while it has to be a somewhat manual process, I'd love to see more organizations get closer to the stat that management can see is what percentage of our endpoints have we received logs from in the last 24 hours or last month? Let's start with once a month. What percentage of our assets are inventoried and managed and we're receiving logs from out of all devices that consume a MAC address on-prem. Mm-hmm.
That's a hell of a
stat. Right now, it's probably a low percent. Like every pen test I have ever has as a finding, you have more machines with 7-zip than you do with your EDR. Let's find that gap. We have more machines with Chrome than you do with your EDR. Let's find out why that is and deploy more fully. Recovering SCCM now, config manager admin here, and agent health is a constant concern. You're probably never going to reach 100%, but can you get closer? Can it be part of help desk role per shift? They find at least one new endpoint to get managed.
Ooh.
Per shift, per employee. That sounds wonderful.
That's a
You're making progress. The next step is important one.
Gamify that. Gamify that stuff, and yeah, make it. Who found the most for the month? Right, you get a bonus.
Ooh. That's what they, you know? I mean, like in terms of your bang for your buck, like that is worth an actual literal bonus.
Yeah,
on a weekly or monthly basis, that is so cheap compared to all of the other stuff out there. Who can find the most assets that are currently not being managed and make them like there's all sorts of people will game the game and can I add some new unmonitored assets so that I like, but putting those aside,
right?
Like a couple hundred bucks even per week amongst help desk, like that will get people to actually set up and pay attention, let alone the human competitive nature of. Yeah, so we don't even have a minimum. Maybe it's just the gamification, but you're going to get a lot. Like I did like Windows migrations back in the day, and each of the interns would take, I think it was 5 or so users within the environment to migrate to like Windows XP or whatever it was at the time. But the one intern is like, no, I'm going to take 7 or 9. Like he did really well in life and standing out, just the inherent human wanting to gamify and win all the games. If there's a slider, I want to put it all the way to the right. If there is a comparison, I want to be the bar chart that is the highest up.
I just got contact from our main guest saying he is looking for a Discord invite. And he is so very sorry and incredibly embarrassed. Let's see. I just dropped in the Discord, so...
We'll see what happens.
We'll cross our fingers.
We can pivot back to that. Like we're speaking tangential to
exactly. I mean, really, that's ultimately what we want to get to, right? Is like ultimately we want to know that the person logging in somewhere has actual rights to do the thing on that they're logging into, right? And that's what it boils down to. So yeah. All right.
Out of the actions that are actually taking place, how many of them do we have visibility into, and what are some things we can search for to find for this isn't what should be happening? Like, if you don't have visibility into a place, I say as a pen tester, there's effectively nothing you can do to get caught if you're running on an unmanaged endpoint other than breaking production somehow.
All right, James is in the Discord.
So how can we add a second detective control to our environment?
Yeah, I'd note it's a common theme I've seen where individuals are responsible for managing Active Directory, but they can't tell you what practices or processes they do to manage Active Directory. And yeah, put in a little thought to it, Jeff, walking through like how can we make an iterative process that anyone can perform, even if it's just identification. You one device a day, one user a day, you make huge strides over a year or a month or a week even.
It's that thing
I
that,
often bring it back to my favorite fantasy author, Brandon Sanderson, and it took a couple of books for this quote to come out, but the most important step you could ever take in your life is always the next one. Plenty of journeys are many steps away from where you are now. Just keep walking. What's the next step, and can we take it?
1% better today, and 1% better tomorrow, and 1% better...
There's actually a good Einstein quote about percentage improvement. Like one of the least understood thing in the world is compound interest. See if I can find that quote.
Oh, geez. All right. So James is here. James, are you there? Can you hear us? Oh, I talked to him and he drops off. I see how it is. I see what it's like. And he's back. Are you there, James? No? Maybe?
So like I haven't had my coffee yet.
Yeah, not surprised.
I mean, there's a certain level of waking up just from, oh my God, I'm late for the thing. I've been there. So, good morning, James. You're still muted when it comes to Discord itself, though we can see your video now.
Yes, we can see your video.
Switching things up. Okay.
All right. Cool.
So, Jake, you want to switch us over to just like a little bit of background on
our topic for today? James is a security automation engineer from Monash University in Melbourne, Wait, Melbourne? That's how you say it, right? Melbourne.
Melbourne.
Just forget all of the R's. And is going to talk to us today about the Monash Enterprise Access model, which is like the Microsoft Enterprise Access model, but like actually like taken to an extreme and done awesome with micro-segmentation and a lot of cool stuff. James, I'm going to ask if you're going to present that you skip right to the AD version 3 part, and we just delve right into it. We got a lot of people on here that are really smart and used to AD, and they could just, they're ready to have their hair blown back is really what it boils down to. Mine's gone.
Fantastic. Is my voice coming through now?
It is.
Yes.
It is. Yes. We can hear you now. We have lost your camera now at this point, but that's okay.
Yeah. I'm so sorry to start off. My calendar has done me an absolute number and scheduled this call to start in an hour. So my very sincere apologies. It's 6:30 in the morning here over in Melbourne. So it's, yeah, unfortunately we've had some calendar issues and I really apologize, but I'm really looking forward to getting into it. So I'll just quickly get my screen share set up here and we'll get started.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking about various bang for the buck things that you can get done to try and get things going. And I appreciated that on your deck, and maybe you'll hit that again today of like, Your level one, level two, level three sort of processes that you can get into. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the great things is that coming out of TriMark, a lot of organizations is just these really, really simple ways that Active Directory can be used for really locking down just simple techniques that you can use to lock things down, and hopefully some of the things that we can share today do the same.
We still don't have feature parity in Intune and such in the cloud to what we have with group policy and SCCM on-prem. Like, we have some really damn powerful primitives, so I'm excited for making them do your bidding as opposed to fighting against them like we were ranting about printers before you arrived. It was great.
Absolutely. Now I'm just going to have to very, very quickly restart Discord just for max screen sharing. That'll be 2 seconds.
Oh, yep. Well aware of that. Like every time somebody with a Mac joins, like, all right, I'll be back. And we're back.
All right, fantastic.
And once you share out your screen, I will make it maximum size so you get the full window, and yeah, we'll be cool.
Fantastic. All right. Well, maybe. after much waiting, is that coming through?
Let's see.
It was briefly. I don't see it now.
Yeah, it came through for a second, but.
Let's see. There's a screen share button again, I guess.
And is that there now?
Yep.
Yep, right. We can see it.
You guys Fantastic. Can see it. I can't see it yet. No.
is that there for everyone?
I mean, yeah, you can speak to it for a little bit. Jake will be butzing around with Discord to share it to OBS to share it to the stream, but you can get started.
Fantastic. All right. So,
there we are. All right. Cool.
Very, very quick to get started. My name is James Spencer. I work on the cyber risk and resilience team at in the e-solutions team at Monash University over here in Australia. And today I'm going to be talking about a topic that's really dear to me, which is Active Directory and Active Directory security. Often there's many ways that many environments over the years have had a lot of issues with hardening Active Directory. It's a very complicated system. And this talk originally was presented at AusCert Conference, a conference over here in Australia in May of this year. With my colleague Andrew Fitzgerald, who's not here today, but a big shout out to him and the rest of the team for all their work on this. So just a quick overview of what we'll go over today. We might skip over just the first kind of parts of this, but today we're looking at why Active Directory security matters, the anatomy of how a lot of these typical AD attacks work, and a quick overview of the Microsoft Enterprise Access model. So it's a model for hardening Active Directory that Microsoft came out with a few years back. And then we'll dive into what we're doing at Monash to expand on that model in a project we've called ADV3. And then finally going over some quick wins, so some hardening that you can do in Active Directory in just a couple of months to really uplift the standard of where things are at. So I guess just at a high level, Active Directory defaults are really outright dangerous. Active Directory was designed in an era where we didn't have the kind of sophisticated network attacks we have today. So, you know, networks were private and we had a really safe perimeter. You know, you had a LAN, people were on the LAN or they weren't. Today's enterprises are very, very different. And the other thing is every Windows client is a Windows server from an attacker's perspective. So, you know, every workstation can be a file server, a print server, be remotely managed, and many of them do those out of the box. And that opens up a huge attack surface for these machines. And unlike a lot of, you know, modern systems where it's a default deny and you need to explicitly grant. Makes it really difficult to actually lock these systems down. And it requires extensive knowledge to secure it. Anyone who's tried to work on Active Directory knows that it takes a lot of work to get it to that level. And doing that without disrupting the business is a real challenge. So look, I'm going to skip over this first real section, but probably at a bird's eye view, every single Windows workstation has a few things going on. One is that they're all an SMB server, so they're sharing things like the admin share, drives, printers, also things like RPC, so your remote procedure call, which is where you can do things like remotely manage services or task scheduler. These are all things that, say, PS Exec will use. PS Exec, for example, uses Service Control Manager Remote, as well as the admin share. And that's going to get you the ability to remotely execute code. So attackers abuse these features and tear through environments. And a big part of that is because of authentication. Without authentication being locked down on these machines, it's very easy to move laterally throughout an environment and use these built-in features to just absolutely tear through environments. And I think a big thing to really note and something that we're quite passionate about here at Monash is that ransomware and exfiltration events don't just happen because your end users have local admin rights. They happen because overprivileged and unrestricted accounts, often belonging to IT people that are overprivileged, are stolen and then used to move laterally within an environment. And that's something we really want to reduce. So I guess to start off, what does a modern Active Directory look like? So a modern Active Directory in our eyes has a few things. One is the concept of tiering, where we're able to separate the privileges within our directory. Using strong authentication protocols and mechanisms where we're able to ensure that authentication is strong wherever we go. And also looking at things like hardened workstations and servers. So simple ways that we can change just basic configurations in our server and workstation fleets to really secure them. And then going up to things like strict role-based access delegation, really neat tiering is authentication goes up, control goes up. The enterprise access model talks about tiers, where we have a tier zero, which is the part of our environment that has control over all AD identities. So this is things like our domain controllers, our PKI, our domain admins, and also things like hypervisors that our DCs may run on, where we really don't want to breach. So we want to keep it small and contained, and we lock things down. And then we jump down to tier one, where it's our management plane. So it's services that control other services. So that might be things like System Center, it might be print servers, backup servers, workload hypervisors, things like that. Where if you manage SCCM, you manage a number of different workstations. So it's that element of control. And finally, you've got your tier two, which is where you'd have things like your workstations, your app servers, and your typical end users. And in this kind of model, authentication is always going up. So tier two will authenticate upwards to tier one or tier zero, and control is coming down. So something in tier two can't control up. It has to be managed by something with a higher tier. And it's a way of separating those privileges and ensuring we can contain especially upwards lateral movement. The other thing that this model introduced was PAWS. And so PAWS are special lockdown admin laptops, and they ensure that sensitive actions only ever occur from secure devices, and that sensitive credentials are only exposed to these secure devices. And so these are deliberately locked down devices that serve one purpose, that's administering critical systems. And so there's things like we disable web browsing on these devices. We enforce app code signing. We log things as much as we can, because at the end of the day, we want a clean source. We want to ensure that wherever our admins are entering their credentials, they're actually putting in, they're on a trusted device. And so kind of with these things in mind, that's effectively what the Microsoft Enterprise Access model introduced. But the mechanisms to enforce it, especially at the time it came out, were things like user rights assignments, group policies, things like that, which were quite limited in what they could do. And so we embarked on a project at Monash over the last few years called ADV3. We've been through two other major iterations of our Active Directory, and ADV3 has been a project that we've been using to expand on this model. It had a few key topics in mind, the main ones being reducing lateral movement within our environment, having an appropriate blast radius around our different services, and ensuring that we could easily delegate out permissions within Active Directory, but also looking at ways we could use more modern techniques that were built into the directory itself. So Monash is a big environment. We've got one production Active Directory domain with 250,000 user accounts in the domain, roughly 40,000 workstations and 2,000 servers. The domain's only about 14 years old, which in some AD years is, I guess, a bit on the younger side. But today I'm going to take you a bit through how we've implemented ADV3 in our environment. And so I guess at a bird's eye view, ADV3 is micro-segmentation for Active Directory. So what we're doing is we're taking the enterprise access model out of Microsoft and expanding that tier model way down into what we call zones and services. So we put all of our accounts and computers inside a tier into zones, and those zones become lateral movement boundaries. And that's where we want to prevent lateral movement between those zones. And then finally, we have services, which are delegation targets inside those zones. So different services that can coexist together. So zones at a high level come from the term blast zones. And the idea here is that we're splitting bigger tiers into smaller chunks and ensuring that we're preventing lateral movement by preventing authentication between those zones. And it's a very, very simple concept. If one zone is compromised, we don't want the neighbors to be affected. We want it to be as contained as possible. And so they're an administrative control boundary. So say, for example, in tier one, we may have a zone for workstation management, which may include things like SCCM, printing, some file servers. And all of these are contained to one zone. But we could also have a separate server management zone. The idea there is that if there was a compromise in our server management zone, we would not lose our entire server fleet. Well, we would lose our server fleet, sorry, but we would not lose our workstation fleet. So neither of which would be a great day to come into the office, but a great way to separate out those kind of the lateral movement risk in the case that there is a breach. And so I guess moving on from that as well, how are these enforced? So if there's anything that you take away from today, go have a look at authentication silos. So authentication silos and authentication policies are a pretty new feature in AD standards. By newish, I mean they're Server 2012 R2. And in this case, essentially what's going on is there silos, I guess, if you haven't heard of them, that's because they're often complex to set up. And it's not really well documented, and there's not a lot of literature out there about them being used in production. But essentially, there's two ways to use them. You can create a computer silo, which is where you say, put a bunch of computers into a bucket and say, these are the accounts that can log on to these machines and nothing else. call it the opposite, create a user silo and say, these are the machines these users can log into and nothing else. And when what this does is prevents Active Directory actively enforces where users log on, and they will never get a Kerberos ticket, a Kerberos TGT, unless they're on an approved device. Which is what this means is that we're able to suddenly say, even if you have someone's credentials, you can't misuse them and use them in a place you're not supposed to. And happening in the directory itself, that happens cross-platform. It happens wherever the user is logging in. And
quick question part of for you, James. There's a little bit on the documentation about authentication policies, authentication silos, about protected users group. And a line that seems scary to me offhand is that users should always be members of protected users group, but that has ramifications on like maximum login time and such. This is orthogonal to protected users group? It is not required to use protected user group? Or is that just a offhand weird recommendation from Microsoft?
You're not required to. What we do is everyone in T0 and T1 is in protected users, and all of our admin users are in protected users with the 4-hour lifetime on their logins. But we wouldn't enforce it for, say, your standard T2 users. But we've paired them both up at the same time to kind of get the best of both worlds. So for us, effectively, every administrator that's in a silo is also in protected users. You can use them without them. So, for example, you can't put a group managed service account inside protected users, but you can put it inside a silo. So they are mutually exclusive. They're two separate things, but they do work quite well together, we've found. I guess to kind of quickly explain how this actually works with these silos, there's a Kerberos feature called FAST, and if you are not familiar with FAST, I would go check out Steve Seifels' blog, who has a fantastic number of resources on the internals of Kerberos. But effectively what's happening here is that we're getting multi-factor authentication in Kerberos and a secure tunnel, and that second factor is the device's identity. So it lets us, the domain controller, actually see that not only is you have these credentials, but we can see the device you're logging in on. So it's a very, really, really cool feature. It's just turning on armoring is both the clients and workstations, which is the support goes back to Windows 8, I believe. So has definitely been around for long enough to turn on, but it also prevents things like Kerberosing attacks because all communication is double encrypted, not just with your credentials, but also with the machines. For zones as well, we use user rights assignments group policies just as a secondary measure. So I guess if authentication silos, which are enforced at the domain controller, are for the authentication security, user rights assignments are more for the authorization security. So ensuring that a service account doesn't log on through RDP, or that a user account doesn't log in as a batch job. And we're able to generate these just with some PowerShell scripts per zone. So user rights assignments are also great. Putting in using them just around the environments is a great first step in enforcing the security of certain accounts and where you expect things to be logging in. I guess next to go into services. So we kind of realized that, for example, we have zone 0A, which is where we're managing our directory, but PKI is something that, while it sits in that area, are typically different people managing them. So with services, we really wanted to enable us to delegate out those permissions to more specific people, which is rather than just have these really wide-ranging delegations. So what we do is for each service that we create in the domain, we create all of these groups that are delegated really specific permissions. And I think in a lot of cases, people think, AD tasks are domain admin tasks. And what we really wanted to do was reduce that so that we could say in a particular area of the organization, a particular user is able to perform a very specific action. So maybe modify group memberships, create or use read BitLocker passwords on specific machines just by adding them to a group. So this lets us do really great fine-grained permission control in Active Directory. And we've documented all of these in some of the information that we've released publicly as well.
James, is it a fair TLDR for this slide to say moving from domain admin to OU admin for each of the tiers and groups within it? Because it's fairly common to have something like OU admin, not that it's a built-in group. Is that a decent way to think of it per zone, OUs with OU admins over them?
Absolutely. And I think for us, it's being able to go, you know, it's not an all or nothing. You either a domain admin or not, but you can specifically say, for example, get very fine grained permissions to do exactly what you need to do without having an overprivileged account that could be used for further lateral movement. And that was really, and it really helps us also keep those ADACLs tidy. I think probably one of the last big concepts of what we're doing here as well is JIT. So just a full disclaimer, outside of my work at Monash, I work at LiftNet with the amazing Ryan Newington. And one of our products, LiftNet Access Manager, does just-in-time access for Active Directory. And what this means is that for all of our servers, all of our workstations, we clear the local admins group. And the only people that can get local admin are people that perform just-in-time access. So that means that even if you steal an administrator's account, the best you can do is get into what they've logged into in the last 4 hours, because everywhere else they don't have standing admin rights, which means that even when we do have compromised accounts in really sensitive areas, the damage is contained to an even smaller radius. And this is built on, again, native AD features. So server 2016, the 2016 functional level added time-based memberships to groups, which is what Access Manager uses under the hood. Another one that I would really implore people to go have a look at is smart cards. Windows has had smart card authentication support for years, so has Active Directory. You know, we see in the news a lot, the domain admin password got stolen at this organization. That's not something that we kind of really worry about, because none of our admins actually have passwords. They've just got a smart card. YubiKeys are really, really cheap. And for many organizations, just protecting the domain admin accounts with smart cards is a great way to lock down the environment. It's just creating an ADCS template, enforcing smart card logon for a user. And that's it. You've massively uplifted the authentication security for these users. And so at that point, you know, it's also a great time to audit your Active Directory security certificate services. So I'd go have a look at Jake's great tool Locksmith on and just auditing some of those configurations. And I guess to kind of give just a bit of an overview of ADV3. This is what something might look like. So for us, we've got things like up in our T0, we've got things like our hypervisors are split out from our AD management and our identity management. And then going down into the management plane, we're splitting out things like server management from workstation management. And it's all almost this nesting doll kind of model where everything in the environment is really contained into the smallest area possible, down to the point that where we're in tier two. So with our workstation fleet, the lateral movement boundary, there is a workstation. So if one workstation gets compromised, our model builds around that is the start and end point of that breach. And so I guess to kind of go over the benefits of this model, we have zones and silos at every tier. So T0, T1, T2, putting out everything from our domain controllers all the way down to our workstations. And if one of these zones is breached, the higher tiers are protected, its neighbors are protected, and also the lower tier zones that it manages are the only things that are really going to be affected. So it allows us to really contain that kind of structure. I might skip over these next few slides, but just conscious of time. But one of the big things we've done here as well is automated a lot of this. So one of the hardest parts about maintaining AD is keeping it clean and consistent, as I'm sure any admin would know. And in this, throughout this project, we worked to use PowerShell to build a module where we can do things like create a new zone, pre-staged computer objects, things like that. And also we have a couple of triggered jobs, so fixing our ACL permissions in Active Directory, protecting our privileged groups, things like that. But also throughout this process, we're able to take this same script and run it progressively through our development environments to ensure that we've got full coverage there as well. And I think probably, and I'm not used to doing this talk in half an hour, but this is, I guess, probably the main slide that I think is a great resource for we'd love to share. So I guess to start off, the bottom corner is the Active Directory Security Guide that we've shared on our GitHub, which includes a number of a much more deep description of how these different features work and a way that Active Directory could be structured using a model like we've used. But we also appreciate that this isn't the easiest something that you can do overnight. So I think there's a couple of levels that we'd look into for some quick wins. The first is, you know, in level one, using things like the protected users group to protect privileged accounts within the environment. Moving smart card to smart card login for privileged users, like things like your domain admins. A bit of a plug, Listener AD password protection. It's free, but it allows you to, in your environment, ensure that everything going through Active Directory is checked in terms of password changes, are checked against things like have they been pwned, but also common words in your organization. So always great to make sure that users' passwords are as secure as they can be while they're still around. Using LAMPS to rotate those local admin passwords on machines, but also pairing that with things like user rights assignments rules to prevent privileged users or local accounts, which I guess is your network level authentication enforcement, to prevent local accounts from being used across the network. So ensuring that attack surface is a lot smaller. In the level two, looking at things like culling your tier zero accounts, so making sure that your tier zero is as small as it possibly can be. Using things like passwordless GMSAs rather than service accounts in the environment to run services, which is a great way to prevent those pesky passworded service accounts getting stolen. Also looking into things like turning off SMB or RPC for workstations and servers where you can. This is a really, really great way to prevent lateral movement. And we know from many red teams we've spoken to, this is something that if it was in place would cause them a lot of strife. So definitely something that's a bit riskier in an organization, but worth looking at implementing where you can, just to reduce that attack surface. And also things like implementing JIT for your servers is a really great way to prevent the kind of standing admin rights that we often see in these kind of attacks. And also, I guess, going up to the level three, Microsoft had a great blog post come out called Protecting T0 the Modern Way, which is where they started, it's the first literature we'd seen out of them in a while talking about silos. And it's really, really great resource for creating a T0 silo where you're locking your domain admins to domain controllers, for example. A really great resource and something that I think for many organizations, that it's a great way to start with silos. But also looking at ways to introduce things like PAWS into your environment. So those privileged workstations that are just for your admins, where you've got a lot higher security and a kind of secure keyboard to perform privileged actions. I will say that this kind of work does take a village. And we've had a very large team over the years working on Active Directory here. Our team, enterprise engineering team, is led by the amazing Ryan Newington, but it's a massive team that's worked on all of this over the years, and a massive shout out to all of them, with whom none of this would have been possible. So, look, I know we've already gone 5 minutes over, so I very much apologize again for the time zone mix up, but more than happy to dive into any questions or anything like that if we have time. But thank you very much for coming along. I will leave this slide up just for now, which has got a link to the resources that we've publicly shared around how we're doing things in Active Directory. But yeah.
We had a question. Thank you so much, James. Like, seeing it again, speed ran, you know, has been fun. But had a question in the chat about whether you're using pure PowerShell or DSC to do your kind of ACL and other stuff maintenance.
So we're using pure PowerShell in our case. We started looking at things like desired state configuration, and ideally we wanted to also look at things like Terraform. But what we found is that the expressiveness wasn't quite there. What we ended up doing is building our scripts to run over the top of the directory. So it would kind of go through each different component that we have configured. So zones, tiers, silos, things like that, and just compare what it thinks they should be versus what they are, and just tweak them to accordingly. It's definitely at some point we would love to get more of that out, but I think at the moment, just because of the amount of business logic that's kind of tied to that, it has become a bit of a behemoth of a script, as you can probably imagine, that's quite tied to specifically us.
I mean, it's better a behemoth of a script as opposed to currently for most organizations, it's a manual process that's happened differently for every little tier and silo, even if they do exist. So at least it's programmatically done, even if it's biased, even if it's not DSC, it is still consistent, which is better off than essentially every Fortune 500, for example.
Absolutely. And I think for us, the last thing we wanted to do was, you know, we'd seen in our previous AD iterations, it had been just that right click, create an OU, create set the permissions, and it just didn't scale. And for us now, the fact that we can run two commands and have an entirely new segment of Active Directory set up and be bringing machines in has been fantastic. With the diagram I showed, we've actually got far more, we had far more zones than we do there now today, just because of how easy it is to spin them up, and we can really make, it's an easy call to make that this thing needs to be segmented off. Let's just go and apply that, because it's easy. It's so easy to create those new areas and that segmentation. Then it's much easier to do that than engineer, well, how's the security, if this going to work, if these things have to coexist. So yeah, it's definitely a nice place to have gotten to, but I think a lot of that comes down to the technologies in AD. So your silos and your user rights assignments, things like that, just being very, very easy to enforce and really doing their job.
Wonderful information. Thank you so much, James. Just try to do a couple of takeaways for those watching that are the immediate next steps. What is the literal next thing they can do as easily and quickly as possible? You mentioned protected users group. How about this? Can they today add one admin themselves, like their own admin account, to protected users group and take that literal first step? Or what would be what is a thing they can do today that gets them on this path?
Absolutely. I think there's a number of simple ones, but protected users group is a fantastic way to protect those crucial users. And it is one where it's literally dropping someone in a group, which is, you know, as far as security goes, is a pretty great place to start. It's a very easy win. Obviously, with all these easy wins, there's always that you've got to read the fine print and protected users. I know Jake has done some great work around describing some of the things to look out for with protected users. But I think with a lot of these, it's picking a couple of admin accounts that you can test with, putting them in protected users group. Silos, for example, they will only affect the things that are directly added to them, and they have an audit only mode. So you can add these users into these groups, and there's explicit events that you'll get out of your domain controllers that will say, hey, I didn't do anything, but here's what I would have done if this were enforced. So there's a lot of these tools have great ways to gradually bring them in, rather than it being, I put all of my environment in silos and now I can't log in and causing outages, which is, I will admit, I have experienced far more times than I'd like to admit on camera when testing this. But It's definitely all of these things have audit modes. They have great ways to gradually step in. And I think a lot of it too, the other big one is smart cards. I cannot stress it enough that there's so many attacks you see where, especially the newsworthy ones, where it's a domain admin password was stolen. We speak to auditors and, you know, when we go through audits at work, and we never quite know how to answer the question of how strong are your admin's passwords, when we have to say, well, the length, well, I don't really know because we don't really have them.
Fun fact, I do know that the details of this one, when you check that box for logon requires smart or smart card required for interactive logon, the password is randomized once as of that moment, but it's 127 random characters, so right. I suppose you could say that, and I suppose some auditor is going to push back on, well, it's not rotated monthly, so you're still going to fail the audit, but that's a whole separate concern. Going to back to takeaways a little bit. You mentioned Protected Users Group is a literal group membership, and I love when you can make a change as simple as a group membership, because if Help Desk knows what's going on and a user calls in with a problem and Help Desk is aware of the changes that have happened that are a literal group membership, then Help Desk can roll it back and bring it up internally. And if it's group memberships are the best way to affect change within on-prem Active Directory wherever possible. Hot take, first of all. And then you also mentioned there were specific event logs that were added, especially in things like audit mode for authentication silos. Hot take, in the year 2024, you cannot win security without having centralized log enabled. Like, if you can't have one dashboard of logs throughout your environment, you're boned from a security perspective. Solve that problem first. Logging made easy from CISA is a wonderful resource from that. And being able to have those logs, and look, you're not going to be authentication silos on day one, but can you make that centralized logging? Logging made easy is a fantastic place to start. And can you make an OU structure that supports zones and consider moving one new server into it? Oh, you want to bring up a new file server? You want to migrate something to Server 2025 because you do get some legit performance improvements there? Can the new one be siloed? Just somewhere to start.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, as we kind of said as well, having that centralized logging and visibility is fantastic. And with a lot of these things, being able to put them in audit mode, even if you're not fully, you know, fully convinced on the idea, or you want to test things out more, being able to just put things in audit mode with a couple of test servers that it's not going to have any real world impact, but being able to then just watch those logs and go, hey, this wasn't enforced, but I might want to go look at that. And just looking at those potential failures of what would have happened and using those as a guide is a great way to start as well, without impacting the business, but also getting that extra visibility. And for us, having that visibility straight out of the directory, for us at this point in certain silos, if we have a failure, it's a red alert, but early on it was, hey, that's interesting. We hadn't considered that those systems were authenticating to each other. Maybe we need to investigate that. So it's a great way to be able to understand how these.
It forces you to learn more about your environment, which is a win. Now, just speaking from like the relative difficulty of your first, let's say, half dozen servers being added to authentication silos versus your most recent, can you talk about the relative difficult, like the first few steps are always the most difficult, but can you compare the last few and how difficult it was?
I think that the first ones, it was a lot of it was understanding how these silos work. So there's a lot of complexity, I guess, in under the hood that it was just trial and error for us. It was, you know, creating a silo, seeing what we could set up, and I think that kind of trial and error was a great way for us to learn how they worked and where they worked and where they sometimes didn't work. But at this point for us, it's we bring on, I'd say, 20, 30 servers, like a quarter into these areas. And, it's a 5-minute job to bring something into a silo. So often when we're onboarding new systems, it's not an issue at all. We've got thousands of servers running in there now. But it just really comes down to, I think, as someone who used to work in the AV industry, you sometimes learn your best through failure. When something goes wrong and you have to troubleshoot and fix it, that's where I've always learned. I think with silos, I know that that's not really a great advertisement for them, but it does. It is one of those areas where getting in and actually playing around with it with in your environment, not just what the documentation says, but with your systems in your environment, it really is. It's much easier to just tangibly experience what they're doing and, you know, the feedback you get, as opposed to necessarily, you know, how they work in theory and in practice. I think, you know, having that tangible experience with them is really for our team. Just learning how we could use them in our environment was, I think, the most formative thing for us is, yeah, just playing around, which in Active Directory is not something you always hear and want to have your admins just having fun. But I know we definitely did a lot of exploration and looked at the different ways we could use these.
As much as tier 0, 1, and 2 are all important, I usually push people towards have actual separation between 0 and 2 to start off with. Domain admins should not be able to log on to regular workstations because if they can, they will. So protected users group helps, but a literal group policy or authentication silo denying login to regular workstations is a wonderful first start. You can start off with groups of workstations at a time, maybe even your regular workstations around the IT department, but start with some step. And then I'd probably like to identify 2 servers that are the easiest ones to migrate. That number one may surprise you, right? Hot takes. That domain controllers, if they're just domain controllers, are the simplest machines to migrate to a new Windows server entirely. And file servers might be at least as close due to the storage migration service tool from Microsoft. You could suck out the files and the soul, the IP, the host name as necessary of your existing file servers. And it might be some of the easiest boxes to start opting into this process. Do you have any takes, responses to those couple of sets of servers?
Yeah, absolutely. So domain, the good thing with silos is that in an entire environment, you could have hundreds of thousands of users and apply silo to 3 people. So a user silo, for example, for domain admins can say, domain admins are only allowed to log on to these specific laptops that are our privileged workstations for our domain admins and domain controllers. But as you said, user rights assignments, blocking domain admins from logging in anywhere in the environment is always a very good win. I think it's almost less about specifically the servers. So for what it's worth, we don't put necessarily our servers into those silos. We will put the administrators of those servers into silos. So domain admins, you can create a domain admin silo and say domain admins can only log in interactively in these particular places. And so that kind of means that you're able to, you know, really target and hone in on what admin accounts are we really concerned about and how can we restrict where they can be used, so that even with a silo, if I have a domain admin password or their smart card in my hand and I walk up to the wrong computer in the environment, it won't let me log in. There's no way for that to authenticate. So it really adds that extra protection, but it's, I think, starting with the users, looking at the domain admins, but also those, you know, those IT accounts that are the file server admins, should they be able to log in at a kiosk down in the foyer? Probably not.
Speaking, maybe for authentication silos, some of the easiest, the low-hanging fruit from the user-centric perspective would be those, I hate the phrase service account, user account not registered to a human being, an employee. Could we find the one that's for theoretically these 3 servers? Could we add a new authentication silo for that user account can only log into these 3 workstations in audit mode for 1 month, and then let's move it over to enforce as an easy way to get used to the process and do an authentication silo per service account, at least as a getting started guide.
So yeah, and we'll do a similar thing even with zones. What we'll say is in this zone, so we have a storage zone. So service accounts in the storage zone should only ever log into machines in the service in the storage zone. We don't expect those to appear where SCCM is because they're completely different. It's just very, very simply going, where in my environment do I want to split things up? and where would I expect something to be logging in here, but not over here? And yeah, just grabbing those, you know, a sample of those accounts and going, where can we actually enforce? What would I not expect to happen? Where would I not expect to see this service account? And silos are a great way to prevent that from happening rather than having to get very complex with a lot of group policies. It's going, here's where I expect this account to be going. And even in audit mode, you can go, wait a second, that service account is appearing somewhere else in the environment and it's now throwing me some errors. And as you said before, I liked that description. It's discovering your own environment, which, you know, it's most environments, you know, you, even smaller ones, you're always discovering how they're being used contrary to the design documentation or, well, sorry, if there's design documentation.
Yeah, big assumption. Yeah.
but yeah, I think it's a lot of understanding the reality of the environment and it's a great way to explore that through authentication silos.
I always like a good analogy, and I'm trying to think of, I think most Active Directory environments in practice right now are like shanty towns. They're like, sure, I see this example of a planned city with silos, and currently, if somebody catches their bedsheet on fire, the whole city burns down, is like the average state of most enterprises. So it can be intimidating to look at, wow, this is a well-managed city with like code enforcement and audits and like authentication silos being, if this building catches on fire, it's just the one building. We're not concerned about the entire organization. But I'm very happy that you were on board with what are the next steps to start. And look, the analogy doesn't work great because moving a physical building from one section of the city to another is a big deal. Moving a computer to a new OU, moving a user to a new OU, moving, as we talked about before, a user to be a member of a group is not a big deal. You can go back, and making a next step is not that difficult, especially when you take off the fangs and put in audit mode at first.
Absolutely. It's at the end of the day, we started with one OU from our old tiered structure, and we created a new one, and we started from scratch. And, you know, we have a dev domain that we spun up to test all, well, we have multiple dev domains that we tested all this in. And at some point it was, okay, well, now we've just got to start, you know, I've just moved house. I've got a fairly empty office, as you can see at the moment. And it's the same thing. It's just one box at a time that's moved stuff over, that slowly is tested out. We don't have to move the entire organization in a day. And we also, you know, it gives us some flexibility, but I think it's not this big one day everything switches on, suddenly you have to do all these big changes. I think gradually just testing it with, as you said, deploying a new server 2025 machine, testing new policies on it. I know we often, when a new SOE comes out in our environment, so Windows 11, we decided we're going to turn off NTLM in the environment. So our Windows 11 images are NTLM free and fully Kerberos. But that was a way of going, well, we're not going to retrospectively go back and find all these places with our Windows 10 machines where they're doing weird things. We just say, this is what's going to be expected when people upgrade. This is, and we're making that change at that point. And a new Windows Server release is something, I think, a great time to go, let's reassess the policies. And when you start rolling those out, being able to have, this is the new baseline, and it cuts off at this very clear line of server 2022 to 2025, and it bundling it in with your standard offering or standard image that you use in the environment. I think it's a great time to kind of bundle.
To go back to like code enforcement analogy, yes, we realize that some of these buildings weren't up to code and we're probably not going to rebuild them, but as we're designing this new building, right, you now must be this tall to go on the ride. You must like comply to these security standards as of this point, so the new buildings will be built properly, and we'll try to get people out of the old ones as we can. And it's a process. It's going to be lots of steps. Just keep walking. Even your university didn't do it in one step in one day. And I'd like to point out again, you have dev domain, you had ability to test, you had audit mode. You need to be able to test. The first time you should do this should not be in production, and it also shouldn't be in enforce mode anywhere, because you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah, and I've definitely seen in solos that they work very well. And if you tell them to do the wrong thing, they will do the wrong thing very well and very fast. So it's definitely one to, yeah, as we said, using audit mode. And I think yeah, there's just playing around with in smaller areas of the domain before going too large.
James, one of the things that you mentioned
Wonderful.
yesterday was the way that you work with Linux servers. And are you able to speak to some of that? Because that was really kind of that was pretty interesting to me, because that you're able to do a lot of this as well.
So I'd say that one of the great things about Kerberos is one that Kerberos is for the most part an RFC'd standard. So FAST, for example, is Microsoft definitely contributed to it, but it is a universal standard. So, in we have a number of Red Hat boxes that also use FAST and work in silos. That they all work out of the box. We use SSSD, some different configuration. Red Hat boxes these days can read group policy objects and enforce user rights assignments. It's
Ubuntu as
pretty,
well.
and so for us, it's almost like they're just the same kind of machines. There is obviously some quirks around, authentication and smart cards over SSH and all of those things that I'll spare this room hours of me yapping about. But it's, I think, yeah, there's at the end of the day, I think a lot of these technologies are really they're quite universal. And with silos with Linux machines, the good thing is at the end of the day, it's enforced in the domain controller. So if I go to a Linux machine, I'm not suddenly going to be able to go, well, oh, Microsoft's not looking. All of these other Active Directory or Kerberos controls might not be around locally on the box. But at the end of the day, if I'm not coming from a device I'm supposed to be, the silo is still enforced. We managed to get it working, and hopefully we can get some more information out at some point around how we've managed to get everything working all happily. But yeah, I think there's a lot of these things with Kerberos especially are just RFC standards. They do work together. It might take a bit of elbow grease, but there is that kind of we have one size fits all for our servers. Our authentication is enforced the same wherever you go, no matter what the operating system, which I think is for us has been after a long time of having maybe some differences, it's been not really nice to really reunify that as part of this project, but also uplift security at the same time.
Mike, did you have any questions? You dropped off there for a while. We were missing your face. Anything you wanted
I
to?
was just gonna say, James, it's great work that your team's been doing. Like, it's awesome reference material. And I think echoing what we talked about earlier, right, it's a journey. So it's all of this is things that you can start to test and you can start to improve. And oftentimes it's just setting a goal and trying to chip away at it over time. So no, it overall, really appreciate it and great content. Super valuable for the community.
Thank you very
I
much.
think
Well,
making
it's
a public
been.
project and not just holding up like too much information is siloed, to go back to your earlier point. So I'm glad that it's being shared with the outside world.
Yeah, it's
Yeah,
been
I think for us, what we realized is that there's so many places in a lot of these technologies. There's a lot of ways we've done a lot of learning to even get out of the gate. And for us, it was we didn't want to have other teams go have to start from square one as well. There's what we've got out there publicly doesn't have the exact configuration of our everything that we have, but it is a way. It's been great to be able to share that information, and hopefully for a lot of teams, as you said, it's either reference material or just some ideas of how you can look at things a bit differently in the directory. So we hope that anyone who's interested can take a look and hopefully get something out of it in one way or another.
Yeah,
Speaking of
I think
which.
it's a mistake to look at all of those policies together and think, oh, I have to have authentication silos and protected users group. Like they're the four walls of a building and the roof. And if we don't have all of them, it's useless. No, everything is a step change and improvement to what you already have. And what is the next step of the next step? Like what can we put in audit mode? Can you spin up a dev lab today? Can you detection lab? Can you do purplecloud.network? Can you do a game of Active Directory and have your own lab to at least test one of these things? And if you break your lab, so what? And after you've done it in a test environment, can you add that group to your production in a DevOU that's not testing real world stuff and put it in audit mode and say, hey, can we do these logs centrally? Because me logging on to domain controller to spin up event viewer, and actually the logs might be on one of five domain controllers that we have. Maybe we should centralize these. And by the way, here are the things I've done in my lab environment. That's going to go over a heck of a lot better than, hey, everyone, I kicked down the door, and this is how it shall be. And I'm just going to do this in production and see what happens. And if something goes wrong, then I guess we're just screwed. That change will not be accepted, to put it mildly.
Love it. James, how can people get a hold of you if they want to get more knowledge? Obviously, you have your GitHub. You had that up on for a while, but like you specifically.
I've got right now an empty blog at blog.jcspencer.net. Beyond that, my GitHub, my socials typically around that JC Spencer. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on all those different platforms. I've definitely this year definitely want to get some more blog posts and stuff written, so check me out on those different platforms. But in the meantime, check out it's github.com/mon-csirt. So that's our Monash's cybersecurity incident response team. We're putting out some content, so both from our Active Directory security, but hopefully some more in the future. So definitely go there, check out the Active Directory security guide, hopefully that's something in there for everyone.
Sweet. So one thing we like to do when we're wrapping things up is we like to go around the room and just talk about something good that happened for you for the week. We'll let you go last. Something good for me is I went out for a Diwali celebration last night with my daughter. She's at a new school that has a large Hindu population, and they had a Diwali celebration, and so we got to go. And it was fantastic, and got to have some great food and, you know, watch some wonderful dancing, and just really nice to get outside of white bread Ohio for a little bit. Jeff, how about you?
This week, on the positive side of things, was my daughter's first week in preschool, and she is loving it. Our first day picking her up, we were all worried, like, how was it today? She's like, oh, I loved it. I had so much fun. Can I go back right now? I'm like, tomorrow morning, yes, but they won't take you at like 5 p.m. on the entrance side. So I'm quite happy that she's in a place where she can get attention and learning on a daily basis, and she's happy with it.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, it's always good when the kids are happy at the school, right? Like, that just makes it that they're much more willing to do well.
Yep.
You know?
Less dad guilt.
That too. James, what happened good for you this week?
Well, at the start of this week, I moved house. So after anyone who knows the housing situation in Melbourne, I've been in a share house for a number of years. So this week I moved into my own apartment for the first time. So right now I won't tilt the camera down because it's just boxes and cables and everything else everywhere. But it's I've very, very lucky to have an amazing group of friends who were able to come over, cut all of my possessions from one end of the city to the other, and now just slowly unpacking. Just moved in.
Fantastic. Love it. New house is always fun. As soon as you get everything unpacked, of course. I think I still have a box that I have yet to unpack, and I moved in 13 years ago. So, you know, who knows?
Only here that all you finish unpacking, because nobody ever finishes.
Yes, very, very true.
It makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was a wonderful talk. Again, James, thank you again for coming out and speaking. And again, we are going to donate $5 for every one of our live viewers that we had today. I will check the stats for that later to see how much that is. And that is going to the Man Cave, which is in Melbourne. Is that correct?
Yeah. So the Man Cave, they're an organization based in Melbourne. They work with adolescent boys all around Australia, doing great work around emotions, vulnerability, and really just bringing up providing a lot of support for young men all around Australia that in their emotional and social well-being and development. They're a fantastic organisation. They're doing a lot of really, really great work. And I think with a lot of today, with some of the, I think, the role models that and content that's being, you know, pushed at young men, I think Man Cave is really countering that and doing a lot of great work in showing, helping raise some really emotionally intelligent and caring, compassionate young men. So really, really believe in what they're doing. And I think that, what the work they're doing over here in Australia has been tremendous to see. And that the expansion of what they're doing is really great as well. They have a really, their programs are very, very well designed, but also they're now contributing back to a lot of research in Australia around and as very a data driven organization, they're really keen on delivering the best services they can. But the impact that they're having with boys all across the country and especially Melbourne is fantastic. So would definitely recommend checking out what they're doing because they're a fantastic organization here in Melbourne.
Excellent. Well, we'll have to, we'll definitely learn some more about them as we go and make that donation. So thank you again, everyone. And if you AD security, if you're nowhere near the Monash level right now and you need a little help, come out to Trimark. If you're just stepping into the cloud, come to Trimark. We'll help you. We'll help you get along. And if you need some, just some good entertainment on a Friday, stop back next Friday for the happy hour. I think next week, I'm not sure who our guest is next week, but I'm sure it'll be someone fun. So thanks again. Thanks for coming out and listeners to us yammer. James, Jeff, stick around for a little bit.
All right. Thanks, everyone.